Hey everybody, if it's Tuesday at 1:30, it must be Tuesdays with Dave. I want to welcome everybody to the call. It's good to be back. I was out for almost 3 weeks with the flu. It's pretty nasty. What happened was one of my children got the bug, and because I'm the primary caretaker, I got it too. And then she recovered, and then the other one got the bug, and then I got round two. And then as I slowly descended down, I ended up getting worn out, run down, and had bronchitis. So, but I'm back. Feels great. Just got done with a workout, started doing CrossFit in the afternoon. At noontime, that's why the call just got shifted to 1:30 because the workouts end at 1. You know, here's the surprising thing about working out so hard in the afternoon. First of all, I've always wanted to try CrossFit. As most of you know, I did Ironman Triathlon with my brother Dan. We finished in 14 hours and 52 minutes. Did the Boston Marathon a couple of times. But then, after realizing I've got 3 degenerated discs, 2 herniated discs, and multiple bone spurs, I switched from endurance to the obstacle course races, which are a lot of fun, like the Spartan races and Bone Frog and Savage. And so we get together. I got a team, my brothers, my nephews, a few friends. We go to these races and have fun for a Saturday afternoon. So I always wanted to do CrossFit, but I couldn't get well, first of all, my back wouldn't allow it for about 2 years when I was in that two-year pain period. But then after that, I just couldn't get there early in the morning. So having lunch with a friend, talking about how I'd love to try CrossFit, would love to try it for years, he said, well, why don't you go to a lunch class? I was like, duh. So a couple of years went by, and I hadn't tried CrossFit because I didn't even think about the lunch class. So started lunch classes. A few weeks ago, not the last 3 weeks, but 2 weeks before that, got back into it this week, and it's surprising how much energy you have in the afternoon after working out so hard. CrossFit reminds me of those endurance sports because it's not over a long period of time that you're challenging yourself, but for a very short period of time, you're challenging yourself to the max, and it just feels really good. So, yeah, it ends up giving you energy for the rest of the day. It doesn't make you tired. It makes you more awake and alert. So it's good. It's good stuff. So as I digress, that's what's going on over here at RE Mentor. We just had the commercial training class where Bob Bowman was teaching, and he had a very special guest analyst there. If you're there, you know who I'm talking about. If you weren't, it was actually his granddaughter, who's pretty smart. I think she's about 7 or 8 years old. She's pretty smart. And she was actually interviewing him, and he was interviewing her, and she was dead on the underwriting. And that's because Bob's so good at underwriting. So that just happened. Excuse me. What I'd like to do is welcome the Washington, D.C. students and the Minneapolis students. Welcome aboard to the coaching program and the mentorship. Just, you know, success is a simple formula. It's 2 and 2, which we'll talk about at the end. But it's just simply doing a little bit every day, following what the coaches say, following what the program is, doing your homework, and through just sheer persistence, you'll eventually become successful. Sometimes it happens quick. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time. But if you're persistent, it will happen. So we've got the New York/New Jersey Immersion event on May 4th, 5th, and 6th. That's this weekend coming up in Fort Lee, New Jersey. We also have the D.C. Immersion coming up May 18th to the 20th in Arlington, Virginia. And if you haven't signed up for the Ultimate Partnering, where I am going to go toe-to-toe with Sugar Ray Leonard, yep, been training for that one as well, but that is September 7th through the weekend of the 7th, whatever those dates are, here in Boston. Expect to have about 1,200 people there, alumni, new students, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And you get to watch me go toe-to-toe with Sugar Ray Leonard. He's going to be our keynote speaker. All right, I want to give a high five to Lee's son from Saratoga, California, because Lee recently purchased a 50-unit property in Carson City, Nevada for $1.85 million, $27,000 in cash flow per month. That doesn't say if that's net or not. I would assume that's not net at that price. But she also just purchased a 32-unit in Carson City for $995,000. And that cash flow is $19,000 per month. And she found these properties through CoStar. If you're not familiar with CoStar, CoStar is like LoopNet, but it's a paid service. And the good thing about CoStar is you can take a look at your markets, your owners, the valuations. It's very, very thorough. The bad part is they require that you sign up for a year. And it's like $400 to $500 per month. But it's good when you're in there. Lee had a couple of value plays there, or one value play at least, is that the property had below market rents. And he says that understanding emerging markets were his key to finding those cash flowing deals. So high five to Lee. All right, so Britt Randall from Newcastle, California. Another high five goes to Britt because Britt just closed on her first deal in April. She purchased a Ford unit for $136,000. Cash flow is $566 per month. I know that one's in pocket because the rules are you want a minimum of $600 per month in your pocket. She's just below that for anything above a three to 10 unit. She found the property online. And the value place is going to be adding laundry in the basement. I don't know, Britt. You better take a look at those numbers because sometimes a four unit does not pay for a laundry unless you buy them used. So think about that. Buy them used, and then you got to really be careful. Make sure it's in a good neighborhood. People will break in and steal those quarters. I know this because we put a washer dryer in a six unit, and that was it was going to make us some profit. We looked at the numbers for a Ford. It didn't really work. But we were buying newer units to put in there. So they have the new systems out there where the people can, pay money and get money on a card and do it that way too. But since there's really not management on site, I'm not sure how that would flow too. So a lot of questions to answer for that one before you go and do it. Make sure it's going to work. All right. So this is the way this call works. You press star zero. Operator comes on the line. She gets your name. She introduces you to the call. And then it's game on. Ask any question that you want. It could be real estate related. It could be life related. I have a lot of experience in both. And I'll answer it the best that I can. So as you're queuing up, pressing star zero right now, I've got some emailed questions that came in. And the first one is from Ignacio Farlansky from Oroville, California. He or she, I don't know what the sex of that name is, he or she is working on a deal, and she has a few questions. It says, what is the trailing 90? Have you ever heard of it? The trailing 90 is really the trailing 3 months, trailing 90 days, trailing 3 months. You don't really want to do your numbers on the trailing 3 months, unless that's all they have. It was and that would be a repositioning, something that took a while to get stabilized, and it's only been stabilized for 3 months. So that's what they're talking about there, a trailing 3 months. Where does loss to lease fall under the underwriter's template? Is it something we should focus on? Yes. Loss to lease is up in the income column. And basically, it's at the very top. It's at near the very top line. You have gross rents, okay? And gross rents is if all of your units were being rented out at market rent, that would be gross rents, okay? So let's say that you've got a two-bedroom and it's being rented out, and the market rent is $700. So your gross rent for that unit would be $700. Let's say that you're renting it out for $600. Well, you're $100 below market. That's your loss to lease. You have $100 loss to lease. So the opportunity with loss to lease is the fact that the higher the loss to lease, the more you can raise the rents after you take over a property. Also, when you're managing a property, you want to make sure that your loss to lease is not getting too high. Otherwise, your rents are under market. So that's how you take a look at loss to lease. That's how you understand it when you're looking at it. And one last question from Ignacio. Should I be focused on gross potential rents or is it gross scheduled rents? Well, you should be focused on both, but in different ways. I just described loss to lease, and that's where that would be your gross rents or gross potential rents. Like everything with that market. Your gross scheduled rent is everything that you could collect if you collected at 100%. So you should really focus on collecting everything that you can, your gross scheduled rent, and also raising your rents to the market to hit your gross potential rents. So, okay, three good questions by Ignacio, and I'm ready. Call operator, who's our first caller?
Our first call comes from Lucky. Lucky, please state your question.
Lucky?
Hi, okay. Dave.
Hey, Lucky. Hold on for a second because I just have to point something out. when I got on this call, I had the first high five was to somebody named Lee, spelled L-I. Second one was to somebody named Britt, B-R-I-T-T. Third one was somebody named Ignacio, and now I have Lucky. Is this like the gender-neutral call of the month? What do you think? Until I heard your voice, I didn't know that you were what kind of a Lucky you were. Although sometimes voices can be deceiving too. Would you agree?
Yes.
So what do you mind today, Lucky?
Yeah. So I'm here in California, Fremont. I just got into this bronze coaching program for 2 weeks into it. I am a full-time employee and I have 2 kids. So I'm getting very little time to focus on the program. I wanted to understand, as a beginner, what should be my realistic goal? I mean, how many units should I target to begin with? And what emerging markets should I stay away from? And what are the
first
good
of all,
resources finding this emerging market? Sorry. Yes, that's a big question.
All right, so your first target it typically is whatever you're earning for your job. So you can quit the job and get that in cash flow. And then the second target is most people, their first target after they hit their job number, their job freedom number, is $10,000 a month, which is actually pretty low in this business once you start understanding and doing this business. So a goal that you can hit that may seem really high right now when you're just starting out, but after you get going, you realize it's not, is $30,000 a month. But first focus on how much you're earning in your job so you can quit it. That's first goal. Second goal is $10,000 a month. Then after you hit 10, you'll realize that $30,000 is not going to be that hard to hit.
Okay. Right.
All right, so which emerging markets that shouldn't you invest in? The ones that are not emerging anymore.
Yeah.
You've got to decide, what side of the country are you on? Where are you from?
California.
So you can decide how far you want to travel. If you're in the Inland Empire, you've got the markets like Corona and Sacramento that are doing good right now. If you want to travel over to Texas, there's some good markets there in Dallas and some of the secondary markets. If you want to go over to Reno, that's a market in Nevada that's doing pretty good. So those are so in terms of which market should you avoid, that's all relative to how far you want to travel. If it's an emerging market and it's good, then, and you can get there conveniently, then I would go.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good advice. And another question I have, if I may, is regarding the coaching program, how to best use the coaching program?
Well, I'm sorry, what was the question?
How to make the best use of this coaching program?
Well, you've got to make use of all the resources. So the resources that you're given, you should create a plan at the very beginning on how you're going to make use of them, and then do a little bit every day that's going to get you towards your goal.
Okay.
So I think to answer your question, the best thing that you can do is either on a Friday afternoon, Sunday night, or Monday morning, is write down your schedule for the week. What you're going to learn, what action items you're going to take action on, and then fill in time slots throughout the week. Maybe you can only fill in one time slot for 30 minutes a day, each day during the week. That's just the minimum. But commit yourself to those slots and then just do them. That's the best use of your program.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, Dave. I think those are my 3 questions.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good day. Take care, Lucky.
Okay. Bye.
All right. So who's next?
Our next question comes from Stephanie. Stephanie, please state your question.
Hi, Dave. Stephanie from New York. How are you?
Good. How's it going?
Oh, very well. I wasn't able to join the call last week, but I wanted to say I went to the Jacksonville Immersion a couple of weeks ago, and it was fantastic.
Who taught
it? Jeff taught it.
Awesome.
And it was the second time I'd gone. I went in to the Atlanta immersion about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
But I don't think I sort of picked up everything the way that I did this time. And the thing that I really liked was Jeff had three different speakers that morning. There was a broker, two in the morning, one in the afternoon. There was a broker and also a property manager, and then someone from the economic development agency came that afternoon. So
yep.
it was a jam-packed weekend, and we got to tour a number of properties. So it was really great. I really learned a lot on the second revisit. Things that I had missed the first time, I really understood going back the second time.
And had you gone out and been implementing, doing some stuff in between?
Yeah, I stayed, actually, because my brother is retired from the military. He lives in Jacksonville, so I stayed over a couple of days. And we shopped one of the properties. Well, actually, we shopped the comp for one of the properties that everyone liked as a group.
Yep.
And I did the full valuation, but the price is really, the proper valuation is the price that they paid for it about a year and a half ago. So I just didn't see how to make that deal make sense, if you know what I mean, because there was a value-add component. 50% of the units had been upgraded. They were proving the model. But I think the price point just wasn't realistic, and that's the challenge I've been encountering, at least in Jacksonville. So one of the things that I am doing is looking for another market that's sort of closer to me in Mid-Atlantic, perhaps. So I wanted to ask you about the mailing program. I'm going to do a direct mailing campaign. And in your apartments guide, you say that we should keep in contact with the seller, with the owner, rather, every 3 to 4 months. And I wanted to know, in the package of letters that you sent us, is there one in particular that you found to be the most effective?
For the brokers?
If I wanted to just run the same one. No, to property owners.
Were you a boot camp?
Yeah, I have the package in front of me, too.
Well, there's a series of four, in a row.
Yeah, so we should just alternate those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you want to track and see which one pulls the most, and that's the one you always start off with first. In each round that you do, but you alternate them and send them out every 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
So you alternate them, different letters going out every month. So you're alternating letters, but you want to keep that direct mail campaign going out regularly, not every quarter, but regularly, because you just don't know when people are get into a situation where they become distressed or motivated.
Oh, so monthly.
Yeah, monthly.
Okay. Out monthly. I see. Okay, great. Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck out there. Okay, who's next on the Wise Cracker line?
Next on the line, we have Heather. Heather, please state your question.
Hey, Dave. It's Heather from New York. How are you?
Hey, Heather. What's up?
Oh, not too much. Hanging in there. I heard you had the flu a while back. How are you feeling?
Oh, my God. I feel much better today. It was actually
a bad one.
Today's been the best day. Yeah, it's been.
Oh, thank God.
Yesterday I went and worked out for the first time, and I felt like I was legless afterwards. But
yeah, it takes a long time
good.
To come back from that.
Yeah, it was that, and I got really run down, too, so my batteries got really, really low, and that didn't help out. But I'm feeling great today.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad. And thanks for doing the call and taking my question.
Sure. You know what I like about Heather is the fact that those little purple flowers that you find on the beach, Heather, they maintain their color for like years. You can put them on my mantle and you don't have to change them out at all forever.
I didn't know that actually about
really?
My own
yeah,
flower. I had no idea.
Heather. Yep. Beautiful,
oh my gosh! I'm
telling
you
flower.
That. But where, like, even the beach up north, like, if you just, what are you doing? Transplanting
yeah.
it into a little planter?
We get them down in Cape Cod. Oh, right over in Cape
oh
Cod.
Oh my gosh! Oh, cool. I'm totally going to try it
out. You don't throw them, you dry them out.
Oh, so you dry them out. Got it.
Yep. And then the colors stay.
Stay. Beautiful. Okay, I got it. Okay. Oh, and so the color stays good. It's a nice, vibrant, dried flower?
Yep.
Got it. Cool. Thanks for that, Dave.
Sure.
Appreciate it. So my part, you know, you had talked at the beginning of the call about how for some teams it takes some time. Some teams get started faster than others. Well, you know, I'm a teacher, and it's taking us definitely, you know, a bit of time, but we're having a lot of fun with it and growing a lot. I mean, I always feel like I'm learning a ton, but I'm taking your advice and starting to look at some smaller properties to start with, in hopes that that could be our catapult, our catalyst. So what I'm wondering is, you know, how do you fund smaller deals? Because with all of the bigger deals we've been looking at, of course, you know, we talk about sponsors, but what do you do for the smaller deals? Like duplexes, triplexes, quads?
For down payment, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know sort of how that works, so how I would talk to investors who might be interested about that.
It's the same, you know, except usually you only need one investor for those deals, so you don't you save a lot on the securities. You don't need an SEC attorney to do any of that paperwork, as long as it's only one investor. Anytime you have two or more, it's security. You can find those investors at the same places. You can find them, you know, in social situations. You can find them at business groups. You can find them at local real estate investment groups, meetups, real estate meetups. Any place where there's affluent individuals.
Okay.
So, yeah, you just get people that are motivated, that are interested in investing, the type of investing that you like to do, and, you know, then they become your money partner.
Okay.
50-50 split.
50-50 split. Okay, so they put down the down payment.
They
qualify
the
for the loan. No, I mean, they put up all the money.
Yep, they put up all the money, and you go, you know, any agreement can be different, but and the smaller deals, in most cases, it's the investor that puts up the money for the deals, and you're the one who brings the deals to the table, and you're the one that does the sweat equity with the asset management.
Got it. So they're putting up. In this case, they're not just qualifying for the loan; they're also putting up the down payment. But then it's a 50-50 split.
Yeah.
As opposed to having other investors put up the down payment, they're doing both of those tasks.
Yeah, the step in terms of qualifying, okay, that would be an agreement as well, because that would have to be an understanding that you talk about, so you're both on the same page with the fact that they're going to go, you and them are going to go on a loan. You want to be on a loan too, because I don't know what reason that you may not be qualifying right now, but the fact that you're on loans for deals that are performing enhances your credit, you know?
Oh, okay.
And it enhances your credibility. So you definitely, if you got a sponsor, you still want to be on the loan.
Got it. Okay, that's awesome. Another question I have, Dave, is about the certificate program. I keep hearing it mentioned on the calls, but I can't find that on your website.
Are you Diamond?
I'm not
Diamond.
Are
you a Diamond member? Are you not Diamond?
No, I'm not.
We haven't rolled it out yet.
I think I was Gold.
We've rolled it out to Diamond members. We've got, I think, 4 of the modules completed, either 4 or 6. And we gave it to the Diamond as bonus. So we rolled it out to them. And then we will be rolling it out, I'm sure, at a discount to gold and silver and bronze, and then to the general public. I'm just not sure where, when. It's not on the top of our list. It's a really good program, by the way. But it's we're having a marketing meeting this afternoon, but we've got a couple other things to roll out, new stuff, before we roll that out. But, it's good. Especially everybody should be checking out the underwriting, the certificate program for underwriting. There's one on underwriting, there's one on marketing, there's one on asset management, there's one on raising private funds right now.
Well, this sounds amazing. I can't wait.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much, Dave. Appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Take care. Till next time. Thanks. You too.
All right. Bye. I was just going to say, wow, it's 1:55. That hour flew. I just remember it. We started at 1:30. All right. Let me take – I'm going to do – no, actually, I'll take another call. I'll take the calls until we have a break, and then I will go to questions. So who's next, operator?
Up next, we have Austin. Austin, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good. How's it going?
Can, Oh, I'm good, good. I enjoyed the boot camp in D.C. It was fantastic. I wasn't able to make the one in New York, but we actually did the one in D.C. It was very good, very informative.
Yeah.
I'm going to piggyback on the – oh, that's right. I'm sorry. How are you feeling? Because you had bronchitis when I last saw you.
I had bronchitis. That was the that was the last thing I had. I could barely breathe. It was the first time I ever had that. So it's kind of scary,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's pretty rough. I've had that, man. You got to be careful with it. It'll turn into pneumonia if you're not careful.
Well, that's what I was afraid
of.
I actually went to the doctor about halfway through it, and I didn't want to get walking pneumonia, which I thought I might have because it was every hour, when I was sleeping, every hour I'd wake up for 10 minutes and just hack, and it felt like there was a hole burning in my chest.
Believe it or not, when you have that, you have to sleep sitting up.
Really?
I'm talking from experience. It works better. But you take care of that. Don't let it turn into walking pneumonia, man.
No, I'm good now.
I want to piggyback on what the young lady was asking you, Heather, before me about the smaller properties, because I have two things. It's a three-family property. It does not have any tenants right now. The family who owns it, you know, they can afford it, so they have another house in PA, but now they're looking to put the house on the market. So I don't have any current, I don't know if we would say a comp, the rent receipts. Because it's a duplex upstairs, two-bedroom, two-floor apartment. Downstairs, it's a simplex, two bedrooms on the first floor. It also has a basement, and then it has a guest house as well. So I just closed on my apartment. As a matter of fact, the weekend after I left your boot camp, I closed on a new place. But I want to buy this place, and I wasn't sure what is the approach to do this financially because of the credit. But I know that when it has income, you can offset the amount that you have to have as your personal income to cover the cost of the apartment. I just wanted some guidance on that.
Yeah, it's 75%. 75% of the net operating income they'll use for your income to help you qualify for the deal.
75% of the net operating income will qualify as my income.
Yeah.
Ah. So basically, if I can come down with a decent down payment, then I can handle this property myself. Because I have money for a down payment. It's just that I was actually going to use that to renovate my apartment. But if I can get this as income, I can wait on the apartment and just maintain it for right now to get that up and running so I have the income. Do you think that's viable?
That would probably work, yeah.
All right. And I know the people. So I'm going to talk to them and, you know, see. Do you think I should recommend that they hold the mortgage?
It would save you money if they're willing to do that. Okay. Hold the first mortgage, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Sure, why not? Be willing to do it, own and finance it, save you all those closing costs and bank hassles. Definitely. Make sure you do your inspections, though.
All right. What terms, just ballpark, I'm not going to use it as a template, as a rule, but just as a template. What are the terms that you generally try and go in for with those types of deals?
There's four offers that you make when you do an owner financing. The first one is no payments, no interest, principal to be paid in X amount of years. Sometimes five. I like to get five if I can. I don't know.
Say that one more time. No payments for what?
3 or 5 years. The principal to be paid off in full. And then they may want interest payments, so you would say interest only, okay, accumulating interest, but to be paid off in 5 years. So the principal and interest to be paid off in 5 years. So therefore, there's no payments still. This is the Ascension model. So you're going into the best deal possible for you, and then you're going into a normal deal. So then the next one would be if they want interest payments, it would be simple interest, paid monthly, balance to be paid off in 5 years.
And when you say paying off in 5 years, I'm just going to refinance the property in 5 years and sell it?
Exactly. Well, you don't have to sell it. You could refinance it and keep it, either or.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm going to keep it because I think, especially now, it's underperforming property. It's empty. You know, they're not doing anything with it. And it's a brick building, so it's in fairly good shape.
Hey, hold on. I didn't give you the last one.
I'm just going to do – Pat, I'm sorry.
So the last one is principal amortized over 25 years with monthly principal and interest payments. That's the one.
And where are you getting this from? Do you have this on the website?
I'm getting this from my head. I'm getting this from 22 years of experience being out there on the field.
Just checking.
You know, in the midst of the battle, sharpening my sword.
All right. Okay. All right, no problem. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no problem. I hope it worked out. Let us know how more we can help you out as you're going through the process.
Well, I'll call you. I absolutely will. As I'm progressing, I will call you, all right?
Okay, sounds good. Good luck.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep. All right, who's next? Who's the next caller?
Up next, we have Zane. Zane, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave. Zane calling from California.
What's up, Zane?
Hey, just trying to stay busy around here. You know, it's always beautiful in California.
Yeah, absolutely. Why did they name you Zane?
Actually, I was named after the Western author, Zane Grey.
Oh, did he write Westerns or did he write poetry?
He wrote, yes, he did. He wrote Westerns, and believe me, I tried to like him, but I didn't care for his novels.
Oh.
It was old Western style, Riders of the Purple Sage and things like that.
I like old Western movies.
I like old Western movies. Don't care for the writing, though. So.
So what's on your mind?
Hey, Dave, actually, I just thought I would get your pick your brain a little bit about working with flippers on multifamily units, like, you know, 25 to 30 units, maybe some more in there. Had an occasion to recently try to get into a deal. But with the flippers, they typically didn't have any historical information. All basically they were going to be able to give me to walk into a deal might be really pro forma. I might get a copy of the leases, but no real financial information from them, you know, or so. I wanted to get your thoughts about, you know, about that and how I put that something like that together, especially for, you know, maybe somebody new. You know, working at this and possibly, you know, with or with, you know, really without a sponsor or somebody with more management experience.
And they're putting the property under contract and then they're flipping it to you?
No, I mean, no, the flipper already had it in contract. He came in, basically bought the contract, let's just say 6 months ago, spent the last 6 months trying to fix it up to a point that they could flip it and get some value out of it. Now, they're leaving a lot of value in it, so to speak.
Yeah.
But you're having to basically buy it on a pro forma basis because they don't really have any history.
Yeah. So are you in what level of mentorship are you in? Are you gold or diamond?
I'm in the gold.
All right. So go into the website, the mentorship website, and there's what's called the break-even analysis. There's actually two recordings on that. It takes me about 45 minutes to describe it. But basically, it shows you how to set a price for a property that doesn't – well, first of all, it tells you how to set a price for a property that's below stabilization, which is 85% occupancy. And it shows you how to get the stabilization. But at the end of that, it shows you how to determine what you should be paying for a property without the numbers. And really, it's based on what the market rents. If you can get a copy of the leases, you're ahead of the game because you'll know what people should be paying. You don't know what they're actually paying, but you know what they should be paying.
Right.
Therefore,
that's
you have
it. Exactly.
They don't even have a rent roll or anything?
No, just a list of, I mean, literally, a one-line item of, you know, apartment 1 and 900. So they didn't have anything they could give me. And really, from what we understand, weren't even going to be willing to give us bank statements to even verify that they were actually getting what they told me they were getting.
Well, that would be the next one. I would definitely want the bank statements because then you can verify what they're getting. I mean, that's the one thing that they can give you is bank statements. If they won't give you them, why? You know what I mean? It's like, why won't they give you the bank statements?
They just, you know, they were flippers and don't really keep up with that.
Well, this would be an acceptable answer because this happens, and the acceptable answer is the fact that they commingled the funds with other properties. You know what I mean? They never.
That's what was happening. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's difficult. You know, I would take a look at the market rent. So you're gonna have to do a market survey for the properties around them. Determine what those market rents are, and then take a look at what they give you for the line items. All right, and then see
right.
From there you can see, you know, where if they're at market, above market, below market. If they're above market, then that's not good because those rents are gonna come down because nobody. They're either lying to you or people aren't going to pay above market for a long period of time. There's no reason to. So you can analyze the rents that way. And then they should be able to give you – will they give you any invoices for expenses?
Nope.
Well, on a 30-unit apartment building, you can, is it all bills paid? Are the tenants paying the bills or is the owner paying the bill?
Tenants are paying the bills.
All right. So a 30-unit apartment building, if you want to be conservative, it's probably about – 40, to be conservative, I would be 40% of the income would be go to his expenses.
And 40% of, is that gross scheduled or gross potential?
What they're getting. They're not going to give you information. You got to be as conservative as possible. So you take a, what they're getting. You take a look at the market and what the market's getting and see if they're in line. Okay, and if they're in line, fine. I would go at 85. I would assume, what are they telling you the occupancy is?
80%.
All right.
But
so,
it's still not stabilized. They might have hit 80%, but they've only had maybe 2 months of that sort of thing.
Yeah, and the other thing with that is an 80% occupancy is really like a 65% economic occupancy. So only 65% of the people are actually paying rent in most cases, you know. All right, so the best thing for you to do – so – this is a really iffy deal, you know. If you can't get the information that you need to do a deal, it's a high risk. And one of the things we do in real estate is we're always trying to take the risk out, you know, as much as we can. So I would do those steps. I would do a market survey first, find out what rents are in the area, take a look at what they're giving you for their line item rent roll, see if they're in line. If they are good, they're at 80%, I would assume 65, and then go to that break-even analysis. That break-even analysis will
okay.
Should tell you what how to calculate what you should be paying, and it says
right.
At the end of that analysis, give yourself a good 20-30% discount because there's a lot of risk involved in this deal. You really don't want to.
I know, and if I could just follow up with that one quick question about that, the only reason I think we were even thinking about it is just because of the deal. I mean, if I could buy it at a 12 cap and the market cap's like 7,
yeah, that would
you know,
be,
it's the only reason there.
You're just going to make sure that you can verify that you're buying it at that 12 cap. You know,
gotcha.
Because all of a sudden when everything comes in, you take over the property, everything comes in, all of a sudden you realize, holy crap, you know, I bought this at a 6.5 cap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The actuals come in.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, tread lightly on this one. Don't look for reasons. This is the mindset to do this deal. Don't look for reasons to do this deal. You know, look for the reasons not to do it, actually, because this is not a high probability deal. In my experience of doing many deals through the years, a setup like this is not a high probability of success. So just
well, that's
I'm not saying that you won't be successful.
That's why I was calling.
Yeah, I'm not saying you won't be successful. I'm just saying there's a high probability that this deal is gonna it just won't work out.
But
if it's one of the first deals that you're doing, chase it, because you get a lot of great experience chasing all the information that you need to really make an educated decision. You know, but if you get other deals out there that you're working on, focus on the other deals because they're probably going to work better than this one.
Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
All right. Who's next? A lot of good calls. A lot of good questions today. A lot of different questions.
Up next, we have Jerry. Jerry, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave, how you doing? This is Jerry. I was at the D.C. mentorship recently.
So you are at the Multifamily Millions?
Yes, with Eric. He did a great job, by the way.
When I talked for the first 3 hours on my deathbed?
Yes. I was there with Austin, the guy I was asking about bronchitis.
Oh, yeah. Well, the doctor said I wasn't contagious at that point, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's going on?
I'm someone that has very, very, very little knowledge when it comes to purchasing properties, and I'm learning because most of my background has been medical. So I'm I find the program amazing because it's a great program. Numbers are making sense. The issue I'm having is, so I just signed up. So now that we have the numbers, we find the program, I don't want to put a bid in until I know I have sponsors. What's the best way to acquire sponsors? I'm a silver member.
Well, you know, as you're going out there and you're getting people on your private money list, you're going to realize that, number one, you have really good rapport with, you know, certain ones. And then of those people, you're going to realize that one, two, or three of them are high net worth individuals. So those are the ones that you'll approach to be your sponsor. So you've got to be out there cultivating your private money list, growing that list on a regular basis. So that's the most important thing you could be doing right now with your mindset.
Okay. Okay. I've got one or two small investors for like three, fours. But if I find like a 100 property, is the sponsor list available for the silver members, or is it a gold member thing or a diamond member?
If you find a 100 plus unit property, bring it to me. We do those deals.
Okay.
We partner with students. Yeah, so.
Okay, so how would I bring that to the table?
Oh, send it over to Jeannie. There's a how to submit a deal package. She'll send you that how to submit a deal package. You got to fill everything out. You know, can't have any missing information. Because we find that when people are missing information, that's usually the information that kills the deal, you know, and it just wastes our time. So we've got a whole setup.
Yeah,
so
of course.
Fill out that info and send it over, and then, you know, she'll land. It first goes to Jeannie. If it passes the Jeannie test, then it goes to Bob. If it passes the Bob test, then it comes from me for the final blessing, and we do the deal.
Nice.
That's the way it works.
Okay. Thank you. Much appreciated.
Yep, you're welcome. Good luck out there. What kind of health do you do? Oh, you went away. All right.
I work for the FDA.
Oh, you there?
So I do.
What do you do?
I'm here. I'm here. I work for the FDA and I do quality control, but I also work in OT, occupational therapy. So I've been doing healthcare since I was 18. Started off as a line medic and worked my way up.
Excellent. That's good. So then you can, that's service for others. That's great. So then when your real estate is kicking off, then you can really, you know, focus on what it is in health that you really want to focus on, you know?
It is. That's actually the goal. I want to buy a SNF because when Eric was doing the presentation, he was talking about one of the guys, you know, that bought a SNF cash. And that, like, blew my mind because I couldn't even imagine that. But that's, like, me and my fiance's long-term goal. We want to own our own SNF.
What's a SNF?
A skilled nursing facility. So it's where we do rehabilitation.
Yeah.
So we're both occupational therapists, so it only makes sense.
Really good business to be in right now with the demographics of the population. Yeah, I was one of my students has been a student since 2006, got involved in healthcare back then. So started buying apartments and doing healthcare, and she does those type of facilities. I was actually going to partner on some of that, but I got busy with other projects. So I looked into that whole industry. So there's a lot of growth there.
Yeah, it's actually about to boom because with all the baby boomers about to retire, it's going to be a big industry very, very soon.
Yeah, because everybody needs all that rehab. You know, they need those facilities.
Agreed.
So after they get done with their operation or whatever, you know, they got to go someplace to repair themselves, and then they go home.
That would make perfect sense.
Yeah. No, you're on the right
especially
track.
If you can set up one of your properties to be a SNF property.
That too, yeah. Yeah. So all kinds of great possibilities. Keep up that innovative thinking. It'll work well for you.
I appreciate that, Dave. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Okay, who's next?
Up next, we have Jose. Jose, please state your question.
Dave, how you doing?
Jose, what's going on?
Hey, things are good. Heard you were sick. I thought you had all these powers. So you are a real human after all.
Yeah, I know. I haven't been that sick in like 30 years. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I heard it all the way
over
to the West Coast. I know. So listen, is there a easier way how I could structure my equity partners in a way that it could just, let's say I have three or four equity partners that I could break it down on the underwriting template? Because I don't see it, and I was just curious to ask you, which will make it easier as I change the carving? You know, let's say I have three of them and each one brings certain combinations of dollar amounts. Is there anything like that you could share or tell me how to do that easier?
So you want to have four equity partners in your deal?
It's just an example. Just an example. Yeah. I already closed deals, but it was more of there's a template that's easier where I could just type in the data that we currently have. And, it, you know, let's say I have two, three partners or four, like I was suggesting. Do you have anything like that that will just break it down on different percentages? And
I do, but it's not out yet. It's we've got a new version of the monthly unit profit finder called the Deal Analyzer. And we're probably like 95-96% done with it. And we should
okay.
be done in the next 6 weeks, I hope. And that has a whole section on your equity partners and the splits and how much the distribution they should get based on whatever cash flow you got get in. And it's got some good stuff.
Okay. Okay, cool. Well, great. Well, I'll look out for that, and I'm sure you'll let us all know. Second question is that you know, one of the tasks that we always have to do is, you know, find deals, talk to brokers, and, you know, always keep looking for money, right? So I've always been interested in starting, like, a meetup group locally, and that's just been my energy driven. Do you have any ideas in what type of meetup I should start off or what that way I could attract people? I don't have that. I'm a pretty social guy when I go to meetups myself, but I wanted to start my own. Any ideas? What do you recommend that what to start it off, or any ideas that you could share from your experience?
You want to start one or go to one?
Start one.
You know, I started a real estate investment group in Boston years ago, ran it for about 4 or 5 years, and then stopped running it. That was before the meetups.com. I don't know. You know, here's where I'll point you to, because we've got a lot of students, different students that have different meetups throughout the U.S., but Jeannie knows who they are. So what I'll do is, why don't you call into the office, talk to Jeannie, tell her that we had this conversation about you want to start up a meetup, and tell her I said that she would refer you to someone who has started one successfully. And then you can call that person,
okay.
And you can collaborate.
Okay. That
okay?
sounds actually a great idea. Yeah, I like that.
Okay.
So
do that.
Yeah.
I think she might, if she's not listening to this call and she's in the middle of a meeting, and then she'll be free this afternoon.
Okay. That sounds great, Dave. I don't have any other questions. Everything's moving along, and hope to see you at the next UP9 out there in September in nice warm weather in Boston. I've been going to Boston only on the cold day, so this will be kind of cool. So I'll see you soon.
Yeah, it'll be really nice. You'll like it.
Yeah, sounds good. Have a good day.
Okay, see you there.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, take care. All right, who do we have next at 2:19 in the afternoon on the East Coast?
Next on the line, we have Pranav. Pranav, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave, how are you feeling now?
Much better. Lots of energy.
That's great. So we started off with the program recently, and I'm on my first step in shortlisting the emerging markets. So the question I had for you was, where do you think Raleigh-Durham in North Carolina is in the emerging market cycle?
I think it's in the seller's market one. I think there's still upside, but you need to go outside the city, like in Durham and markets. The farther you go away from the city and the submarkets, the more yield you'll have. But I like that city. I did well. I bought a property in Durham a couple of years ago, ran it for a couple of years with a partner, and then sold it off, and we did really well. So.
Okay. So that's good. But when I was looking at the population, the outskirts doesn't have that great that growth. You're not seeing that growth in the population, and as you start to grow out, it becomes very undeveloped kind of an area. Do you still think the outskirts, what mileage would you look at from, like, if you were to take arbitrary center of Durham to the outskirts?
You know what? I'm not that familiar with that MSA.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, in a major city, you don't want to be more than a half an hour out, 20 minutes to a half an hour.
Okay. That is very helpful. And I had another question, which is a little bit different. So when you're for larger buildings, I got this 45% operation OPEX ratio. When you do the smaller buildings, 10 to 15 units, what's the general rule of thumb operating expenses you would use?
It can drop down to as low as 28% for the real small ones.
Like when you say real small, you're talking 4 or 10 range?
3 to 10 units.
4 to 10 units?
3 to 10.
3 to 10, okay.
Yep.
Thank you very much. These are
the
questions.
It's not all paid. If the owner's paying any of the utilities, it goes up higher.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you very much. These are all the questions I had.
Go out there and kick butt.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, who's next?
Up next, we have Christy. Christy, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Christy from sunny Phoenix.
Hey, is it always sunny in Phoenix?
It's beautiful in Phoenix, yep.
Yeah, what's going on there? What are you up to?
Well, my husband and I did boot camp and immersion training in March of this year, and we're kind of lucky to get a couple of deals under contract before we even got started on our investor network. So we're doing things backwards, but very excited about things happening. So we've got a few properties under contract in Louisville, and I've been working with Matt Donahue and Jennifer Hale on those with us. And one thing that I've had a really tough time finding as far as statistics is vacancy rates in the submarkets. Like, I can get vacancy rates for Louisville as a whole, but it's, you know, not that absolutely not applicable across every single little, you know, submarket or sub-area. Do you have a place that you like to go to get those kind of statistics?
Yep, but you have to pay. It's reis.com. Costs like $500
okay.
or $4, but it's worth it. It breaks down the submarkets, and it breaks down the occupancy and growth. And spec building and all that good stuff.
Gotcha.
You like to report.
All right. Okay, that was my question.
All right, good luck. Congratulations on your deals.
Thank you.
I like Louisville. There used to be a bakery there. I've been there a couple of times. A bakery called Claire's. I don't know if it's still there, but if it is, it's worth visiting because Claire makes good cakes. Just so you know. Just saying. Okay, she's gone. Who's next? Who's next on the Wise Cracker line?
Next on the line, we have Chip. Chip, please state your question.
Hey, Chip.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Chip, are you a golfer?
Oh, you asked me that months ago, man. No,
I did?
I'm not.
Damn.
Man.
I got to get more original,
yeah.
Huh? All right, let me see. Hey, Chip, what's your favorite snack?
That would be chocolate chip cookies.
Ah, there you go. Okay.
Potato chips also.
Yeah.
So,
Chip
Dave,
and Dale.
my partner and I are... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Nothing. It was an unwarranted comment. So, go ahead.
My partner and I are interested in starting a mailing campaign to owners in our target markets, and we just wanted to ask you whether you had more success with letters or postcards.
I like letters. And the reason being is you can put more information in there to get a higher response rate. It costs you more to get them out, but you can put in a testimonial page of people that you've either done business with or people that know you and can say good things, you know, multiple testimonials. You can put a fax back form in there, or, you know, they can send it back to you via email type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can write a longer letter because it's obviously you can use full pages. So they both work. The great thing about postcards is the fact that it's opened. You don't have to worry about
right.
never being opened. And if you've got a good, compelling headline, that's going to draw them in. And if you hit them with the right situation where, you know, they're motivated, then you're going to draw them in. So that's the big difference between the two.
Yeah. Yeah, that I knew, but I thought you of all people would know whether you tracked whether you had more success with letters or postcards.
Yeah, letters.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
All righty.
My favorite snack is Sun Chips, by the way. All right, who's next? I do like dark chocolate. As a matter of fact, I just noticed in my draw that I still have a dark chocolate Dove rabbit from wrapped in foil from Easter that someone in the office gave me. It's a beautiful thing. All right, who's next? We got time for two more. 2:26. Got to go to a meeting at 25 of the hour.
Okay. Up next, we have Stella. Stella, please state your question.
Hi, Dave. Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh,
how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. What's going on in your world?
You're getting a lot of Californians calling, I see. Successful,
yeah.
Californians. So I'm really new. I think I signed up for the Gold membership 2 weeks ago, working with Jeff Kissy. I'm trying to identify my emerging market. So first I wanted to say I am a dark chocolate fan too, so that is duly noted. I'll have to remember that. And by the way, since you're Mr. Health and Fitness guy, loaded with antioxidants, has the highest concentration of antioxidants. So.
And the highest concentration of calories too.
Dark? No, but it has less sugar.
I know, but I think like a square of dark chocolate is about 300 calories.
Oh, well, you know.
It's pretty dense in calories, but that's okay. You just work it off. You just work a little longer.
Exactly. So my question, I'm in that phase of putting together my strategy, identifying emerging markets. I like Steve's idea that he often likes to invest in cities he's visited and he likes. So question for you, thoughts on whether Denver or communities around Denver are still considered emerging and could have opportunities, and then also Portland, Oregon.
I think there's more opportunity in Portland because I think it's a little bit lower on the curve.
Okay.
Denver itself. Do you live in Denver?
No, I live in...
Oh, no, you live in California.
Okay.
You know what?
Yeah.
Jeff's doing well in Denver. He's from Denver. I've got some other students that are doing good in Denver. But the thing with Denver is the sellers always want to get higher than market prices, even in down markets. I mean, that city is just unbelievable for that. So I think you'd find deals faster, establish relationships faster, and be dealing with more reasonable sellers in the Portland market than the Denver market.
Okay. And where else along the West? Any comments about Washington? Because my strategy might be basically
Tacoma,
West, California, through Oregon and Washington.
Tacoma and Olympia. Seattle's a really tight market, but those two, there's still some yield available. I've never
Which
been
ones?
To Tacoma and...
Which
Olympia.
All right. What about Eugene? Eugene is the second largest city in Oregon. What are your thoughts on Eugene?
I don't know it. It's
okay.
You know, it appeared on my list. I can see it somewhere, but it's not recent. So it hasn't recently appeared on anything that I've read or looked into.
Okay.
So it's not to say that it's not emerging. It just hasn't hit. I would go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics if you're interested and find out what the job growth has been for the last couple of years. Or I'd just call over to their Economic Development Committee through the Chamber of Commerce and ask them, you know, what type of job growth have you had. Usually on their website they'll have articles that were recently written about the city itself, you know, bragging about good place to live, top 10 places to bring your business but just an interview simply with somebody from that Economic Development Committee as to how aggressive they are to bring in jobs and what jobs are coming in, that'll give you a good indication of where the city's at.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Wait a minute. You have to take one more note. My birthday's in August, so send chocolate in August.
Are you partial to dark chocolate brands? Because I'm a little bit of a connoisseur. I've probably tried 10 different brands, you know.
Yeah, actually, my favorite is Lake Champlain. It's a Vermont company, and they have a mint dark chocolate. It's really good.
Very familiar with it. My mother-in-law lives on Lake Champlain and sends
those
dark chocolates to my granddaughters every Christmas. So, familiar with it.
Excellent.
It's noted.
Okay. You have a good day.
You
too. Thanks. All right, I'm going to take one more, and I'm going to head off to a meeting. So who is it? Who's next?
Okay, our last question for today comes from Stephanie. She had another question. Stephanie, please state your question.
Thank you. Dave, I completely forgot the other question that I had meant to ask you, so thanks for taking my call again. I wanted to ask about auctions and how to position myself to participate in an auction. I have been seeing an increase in the number that are available on various auction bid websites, and I wanted to know advice, tips on how I can, well, not just qualify because registration is fine, but how do I line up financing or sponsorship in advance of a deal when it's going through the auction process, or any tips you might have for being successful in the auction process?
What size property are you going to go after?
Probably 30 to 50 units.
Yeah, you know, here's the problem with the auctions. You don't get all the information you need to do proper due diligence. So it's
mm-hmm.
better to buy either before the auction, before it goes to auction, or after the auction when they don't get when the bank doesn't get their price, than it is
mm-hmm.
to buy at auction because of the lack of information. Now, the other thing with an auction is you're going to have to come up with usually about $25,000 at the auction. Everybody does to just
mm-hmm.
to bid. And then a lot of times
mm-hmm.
they're going to require that you put 10% down. That's non-refundable, too. So there's a lot of risk involved. I've had a number of people come to me with good deals at auctions, and I just don't do them because there's too much risk. I'm not, as I said to the previous caller, you know, real estate investing has a lot of risk, and our job is to minimize the risk wherever we can. So, you know, I see the risk reward in auctions not at a level where I'm willing to participate. Not to say that you can't be successful yourself if your risk tolerance is a lot higher than mine at this point, but
it's not.
But I would be
it's
concerned.
Not. Okay. So in that situation, you think it's better to just follow up with the lender after
the auction? Yeah, I would go try to either get it before or follow up after.
Oh, so if I see a property that's available for auction, are you saying that there are ongoing
If you're already in the auction process, you're probably not going to be able to get it until the auction takes place because they had to put some upfront money to the auctioneer. But, you know, there are a lot of publications out there where you can find properties that are in foreclosure, and that's where you get them before the auction. Or negotiate with the bank. You could do a short sale. You could buy the note from the bank. Or when they foreclose upon it, you could buy the property at the foreclosure itself. Buying at foreclosure, that would be a foreclosure auction. There's multiple types of auctions. I avoid those as well. So,
okay, right.
But just find the ones that, you know, you can buy lists. You can – every state has a state financial newspaper. Like in Boston, it's called the Banker and Tradesman. And you can see all the foreclosures in there, and they list the number of units. You would know. You have to figure out what it is in your state, but you would know what's going up for foreclosure. You just read that on a regular basis.
I see. So try to locate the magazine that will have
that. Yeah, you
might
even buy it from the owner prior to the foreclosure.
Single family.
Yeah, you might even buy it from the owner prior to the foreclosure. You know, there's a lot of different things that you can do prior to a foreclosure or an auction that's less risky than buying at auction.
I see. I understand. Okay, great. Thanks so much,
Dave.
I really appreciate it. When's your birth date, Dave?
It's the 9th.
August.
The only holiday
9th?
In August. Yep.
Okay.
The only holiday in August.
Okay, I'll remember.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
You too.
All right. Okay, so for those of you that are new, your homework is 2 and 2. It's a success formula. So you go out and you put in 2 offers a week. Okay, it doesn't have to be a good deal. You just want to get in the game. You want to be putting in an offer because nothing happens without an offer. And go back to your notes from Multifamily Millions Bootcamp. Go into the marketing section. Look at the dialogue there. The script on how to put in, for lack of a better phrase, lowball offer. But what you're really looking to do is establish a relationship with a broker. So there's a script involved in that. You want to use that. If you're too nervous to do it in the area that you want to do business in because you're afraid you're going to look stupid, then you do it in an area where you know you're not going to do business in. So if you do look stupid, which you won't, by the way, but if you do, it doesn't matter anyways. And then after you do a couple of calls on that market, you realize, wow, I'm pretty well trained. You know, this – I'm very comfortable doing this, and then you start doing it in the market that you really want to do business with. So nothing starts without the offer. That's why that's the first two. And the second two is to get yourself into two networking situations per week. Those networking situations can be anything. Social situation, kids' sporting events, your church groups, anything that somebody's going to come to you and have the opportunity to say to you, hey, what do you do? You know, and then it's game on. From there, there's a lot of different responses you can give, but you can also go to specifically business building groups or business networking groups where people are there to network with each other to help each other build their businesses. And real estate people are always very popular in those groups as well. So two and two, two networking situations, two offers, and if you just follow that simple formula, simple, you cannot help but be successful, really. I mean, follow it for 6 weeks and then come to me and tell me that you didn't get a deal, because that's pretty much what it takes, about 6 weeks of following it. All right, a deal that you're negotiating and analyzing and under contract. All right, so Jeannie will be on Let's Grill Jeannie next week, and I'll see you the week after that. All right, bye, everybody.